Yeah, I believe we had on the agenda to go till 4. We're going to try to wrap things up by 3:30, because we have a lot of things we've covered, and we could really go on that. But we'll try to go wrap up about 20 more minutes of discussion, and then spend 5 minutes with some after-action points. I know as a staff here, we listed about 5 things that we're going to propose to the working group to submit to us and submit between yourselves for discussion points. So we'll finish up, then go over those working points. Real quickly, I don't want to ignore one of the submissions we got before we go back into our discussion. We got a submission from AFC First Corporation discussing, saying that they formally would like us to review the Illinois on-bill financing program. In talking with our staff and with the staff of the Treasury, we're going to table that right now, because it's my understanding that the Illinois on-bill financing program is primarily residential. And so I don't know that it's particularly appropriate for where we are with this working group right now. That's not to say that we won't get to that eventually, but I know right now we've kind of put the residential side to later on in the working group discussion, and hopefully I characterized that correctly, Pat?
Yep.
Okay, so with that, we can continue our conversation. Chris? We burned everybody out. Excellent. All right.
Darren?
Not yet. Hey, come on.
I know, I'm a pain. I just want to have a short discussion about the end game on this one. Because here's, and you know, I am transparent. I'm just going to lay it out on the table. We figure to do this at PICO is probably in the range of $1.5 million to $2 million to get the system updated, get all the call center stuff done, and so forth. My concern is simply submitting a proposed model or 3 models to the PUC doesn't necessarily provide them the decision framework to understand what the implications are if they choose the model. And they don't have the other pieces of information. So let's assume we go through a pilot, and we're able to then explode the results of the pilot to the rest of the state, or however we might do it. I'm simply suggesting that I think part of this report has got to include what the infrastructure build costs are going to be for the utilities to get everything ready, with an anticipated volume that could be derived from the pilot. So we've got a high level, does this make sense or not?
I concur. I just wrote down here, one of the sections of our final report should talk about full-scale implementation steps, timelines, and cost of full deployment. That's pretty much a no-brainer. I appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah, that's it.
Because, the pilot could be extremely successful. And then we come back and go, oh, Commission, by the way, the full deployment is $100 million. We forgot to tell you that.
Exactly.
Yeah, we agree with Frank, particularly since the costs of either the pilot and or the final program as it's implemented by the Commission are going to redound to our small business customers. There's nobody else that's going to be paying for those costs. So we'd like to, I don't know if an evidentiary hearing is in order, but I'd sure like to have my experts run at this, or at least once it's a little further down the road, have them do some analysis based upon what they can glean from other states and how things have worked. And what the ultimate costs are going to be, because we're going to get stuck with them.
Before I ask another question, I'll yield the floor to our esteemed leader here. Chairman, do you have any comments for the group, or are you just here to observe?
Well, I'm here to observe, but first of all, I want to thank everybody for their participation here today. And we're very excited about our phase 2 ramp up. I'm sure some of you have bated breath concerns with phase 2. But we are moving forward. I think there's some new opportunities for consumers here in the Commonwealth. And so, again, thank you for your participation, and look forward to hearing from many of you on your different programs. Some of you I've worked with some initiatives in the city of Philadelphia with the Greater Philadelphia Innovation Cluster Project, a building footprint disclosure with the City Council in Philadelphia. These are all new opportunities for the Commonwealth, so we're very excited about that. And Tanya, it's great to see you and the OCA represented here as well, so thank you. Thank you for calling me your esteemed leader.
Compensation team, I know we've been doing a lot of conceptual discussion, and we've touched on some of the specifics, and Frank brings up some of the specifics. One of the specific questions I have for the group is, we do a lot of, we do all the evaluation of Act 129 based on TRCs, cost-benefit analysis. And so we had some discussion earlier about computers, back-office operations, all the type of systems that would have to be in place. And suppose they come out to $1 million. And we talked about the cost recovery mechanism possibilities. If the commission ultimately decided to go forth with this and we decided to put those mechanisms outside, or those programs outside of Act 129, and said, okay, recover the cost of the billing systems outside of Act 129, but then the program itself and the rebates and the other administrative type of costs goes within Act 129, that's obviously going to make the TRC more positive, because you've taken the largest chunk of the money and you've taken it outside of Act 129. So I want some appreciate some comments from the group of the appropriateness of, if we go forth with this, should the entire cost go through Act 129, because it does affect the TRC of whether these type of on-bill financing programs are something we should pursue. I mean, we could pursue them as simply a social or a policy, but in terms of a straight rigorous TRC approach, where should the cost go? So I'll open it up to the advocates and the utilities and the stakeholders. I appreciate some comment on that.
Darren, I think you're kind of in trouble either way. As long as it's not subsidized, if you put it in 129, Dan makes the point that our 129 expenditures are class and segment specific,
right?
And the costs are assigned class and segment specific. So if you were to stick, and again, it's a capital cost, so I'm not sure you can even legally recover it under that existing mechanism, but let's presume that you could. I think you'd sink the programs in an instant. If you flip them out the other way, then you're right. You don't recognize all the costs, so you advantage the cost of the programs, and then you have the remaining issue of where do you recover the costs. Again, Dan is probably right. If we went into a rate proceeding, those billing costs should probably, if they're only in use and useful for his segment of customers, would be charged to his segment of customers. So from a TRC perspective, his customers would look okay and the programs would look good, but then they're getting hit with a bunch of capital costs in the rate base allocated to them. So it's a dead-on important question. I haven't, so far all I've figured out is which ways it won't work.
Tanya and I were talking during the break about a part of it, and whether this should fall under Act 129 or not. And she mentioned that to the extent that these things are funded in conjunction with rebates from the utilities, it probably ought to, they should get the credit under Act 129, and it probably belongs there. But to the extent this is financed outside of any rebates by the utilities, it's really independent. And probably shouldn't fall under the jurisdiction of Act 129. And that, to me, seems to pose a whole host of problems for administering the overall umbrella of this. You're starting to parse it out into various discrete groups, and that just increases the cost, I think.
I just want to add, under John's model, the intent of the model is that the utility billing costs would be recouped through the 1.25% origination fee and the 6-8% interest. But I think that might go back to part of Donna's question, which is, that's all well and good if you have sufficient participation in the program to pay back those costs. So again, where, and if you don't have sufficient participation to pay back those costs, I think they are going to fall. The question is, are they going to fall to ratepayers? And if so, I think if they are in support of the Act 129 and we begin to look at them under the TRC, I think you're right. We're going to have difficulty achieving TRCs that are at one or above.
Well, someone had mentioned at the beginning of the meeting the possibility of doing it manually at first until there was sufficient customer interest. Could anyone give an estimate on the costs associated with that?
Well, even if we were to do that, and that might be a good idea to do for the pilot, we're still going to have to give some sort of estimate. If the pilot's successful and we want to grow the program, we're still going to have to give information on those costs and take that into account. Otherwise, we're sort of all killing ourselves. So I think we still have to look at those numbers, and I know the New York program, a lot of the papers that I've read about the New York program, I think it would be the California program as well, said that the changes to the IT system, the buildings, were between the building and the community. Now, it does come inside the utility. I know one of the papers I read was a smaller Mohawk, I mean, it was big utility in New York, their costs were from the ballot. So it's going to depend. But I do think we've got to get a handle on those numbers and decide, is this an Act 129 program? Will it come with an Act 129 dollars that are available outside the Act 129 dollars? We are going to have to grapple with this question.
Let me go a little different way, Donna. There is a way you can do this with no $1 million, and that would be to get the utility out of the billing role. So we actually have a model of that. We do, and I think the chairman probably knows, we do EGS consolidated billing with Blue Star of Texas using what's essentially a third-party billing model. So we haven't built a giant engine and $1 million worth of EDI transactions to make that happen. What we do is we treat them as if they're paymybills.com or PayGo or any of those entities that's out there that we're already sending bills to because customers want their utility bills consolidated. And then we let them consolidate their charges with our charges, render a bill to the customer, remit our amount to us. We haven't made any significant billing system modifications to accomplish that. It's a different model than I heard. I heard that the billing, that it's the termination issue that's the bigger driver than the billing issue. So we would still have termination rights for basic services. We don't actually have any termination rights for non-basic services anyway, even though, John, you say we may. But, I mean, we'd need to change some regulations Correct. To get us there. But that's a model that we're using for... I probably can't say how many customers that they had. It was not an insignificant amount. If you had enough loans equal to the number of customers we're billing that way, people would be knocking down our door asking how we did it. It's a not insignificant number. So I could get us out of the business, basically, get us out of the million, solve the $1 million question, Darren, how about that?
There was some talk that the financial community likes the security and the assurity of, you know, if I'm on a utility bill, maybe it even makes the customer pay because they see that there. If we use this option, does it take away some of that security?
Yes, it does. One of the reasons the financial community is interested in this type of model with the recovery on the utility bill is the fact that people in general pay their utility bills. And when you're basing your underwriting criteria on the previous performance of the utility bill, combined with an overall decrease in the bill from implementation of specific energy efficiency measures even after the advance or the loan, you've decreased their overall burden of the utility bill. So in these programs, you see a lower default rate going forward, and that's what the finance community is looking at, because for the amount of money you would eventually need to do a statewide program, you're going to want it, you're not going to want 2 million. You're going to want 25 million or 50 million, which means you're going to need to be able to bundle these and have multiple capital providers so that you're in the capital markets and you're getting the least cost interest rate on the capital. Whether you're using something very similar to the wheel that's being established by the PA Treasury or other models for a capital pool, you want to get to that point where you have that capital pool and you can drive at those costs. When the group put this model together, one of our overall driving philosophies in the model is that the costs for the program would not be socialized across all ratepayers. It would only be collected from those that participated in the program. And that's why we put in there, for example, the 25 basis points on the origination to go to the utility to help offset the costs of any software modifications. We also put in there a monthly fee for billing, for actually presenting the bill to the customer, collecting the payment, and transferring the payment, so that this would help offset those costs from the utility. And then looking at, obviously, whether a paper or manual or third-party system could be used. But getting it on the bill establishes that credit, and that's what's important. The same way a utility in a vertical market finances a power plant. It's because the capital markets look at it and say, you've got these customers out there, they're going to pay those bills. Therefore, you've got this rate base to actually put the capital forward.
And the key to them paying the bill, I learned earlier, and maybe I knew it coming in the room, is termination rights, right? I understand what you put in. I understand why. All I'm doing is offering the group a suggestion. If the model isn't working as proposed, that it only those fees that you have in there only help. So either the utility's ending up with money outstanding, or Dan's customers in this case end up with an additional bill. So the only other enhancement I can offer you is that Pennsylvania's been pretty successful in developing competition. So if the administrator were partnered with an EGS and used exactly the model I just described, the customer would be getting a utility bill from a competitive entity. In fact, kind of a goal of the retail markets investigation is to have more of that happening, more competitive supply. So if you could create a partnership like that, and we've actually done that in the PPL service territory, a special purpose EGS serving customers of a certain type. They happen to be the old residential thermal storage customers, but so it's doable, and that is a utility bill. And I would think, well, you've got to tell me. I can't. I'm thinking if. So the issue is it's got to be a regulated EDC utility bill, and it can't be a licensed EGS, licensed in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania EGS bill. That's
And the question would be, if you did it through an EGS, how would you look at customers that do not shop?
Well, you would have to get your energy supply. So I can give you lots of cons to that, too. I mean, if you've got somebody who's in the business because they're familiar with financial markets and collateral for loans and payment behaviors and all that, do they really want to take on PJM locational marginal price and the risks of that? Probably not. So I'm not telling you it's perfect, John. I'm just trying to, after having put us in a place where there was no hope, I'm trying to find some ways to try solve the million-dollar question, Darren.
I found out we were in a place of no hope. I didn't think we were there.
Well, when it was really quiet after I spoke, I thought, oh, geez, now what did I do?
I also think that comes back to, like, what is the purpose of the working group, which is to enhance. It's coming out of Phase 2 Act 129 implementation, and so the idea is to see if there's another tool we can offer to increase participation in Act 129 programs. So, I think that's an important, that's where we're starting from.
Correct. And we're running out of time. I had another question, but out of respect for the folks that have traveled to get here, I'll let you get your questions in real quickly.
I was just going to suggest, since we are running out of time, that try to focus on all of the questions, and I think, Darren, you have summarized them pretty well, that are on the table for the next iteration of examination. And the coordination with Act 129 is a whole bundle of smaller issues that we need to drill into harder. But I think that would be very useful. I also think it might be useful to ask folks who have a lot of experience with these programs, like ACCC or other states that are running very successful programs, to weigh in on this particular model, to take a look at it and give us their feedback, if they'd be willing to do that, just so we have the benefit of their input as well. I don't know, John, you may have already done that, but.
I sent a copy to Steve Nadell, but I have not asked him to evaluate it.
Oh, good. Okay. We'd be happy to follow up. So I think, you know, getting more examination of this from a number of different points of view would be also helpful.
Okay. But before I and the team here summarize kind of the takeaway action items, is there anybody else that has any questions? I don't want to cut anybody off here, because we do have an extra allotted time if you have any questions.
Just one back to the utility companies to think about, and that's, yes, I think ideally this would be under a 129 rather than program approach, especially if utilities want to see rebates and that. But, you know, but, I'm sorry, this was probably a bad question.
Yeah, I think that's ultimately going to be part of the final report. But I know that today I think a lot of the consensus is that, as Donna stated, we do want to tie this to Act 129 as an Act 129 enhancement. So if we can get 99% of the on-bill financing to be coupled with an Act 129 incentive, essentially saying, hey, I would have done this, I really want to do this program, but his incentive isn't enough. Oh, you put in this financing with it. Now I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to step up and do something I wouldn't have done, marrying those two. Once we get all those things done and all those things are taken care of, then there's going to be that leftover pile of people that would do this even without the Act 129. But I think it's a small, probably a small subset of what we want to concentrate on.
I just apologize, I got here a little late, but to the utilities, I mean, you do know that in Act 129, you have that 10% set aside for governments and nonprofits, right? And I'm sure you have all measured those numbers or you're looking at those numbers. But my feedback is, in the current economic conditions we're in, to Darren's last point, a lot of these entities want to do a project. So they will leverage your dollars, but the rubber meets the road is their balance sheet is such that they can't put their dollars on the table to leverage it to the next step. So that's really, you know, when I'll be honest, I was the guy pushing this on-bill financing, looked at it from a California perspective of all places with San Diego Gas and Electric. And from my feedback from Chairman Peavy and others in California, it's worked pretty well. I understand it's not your core function. You don't want to be GE Capital. I get that, okay? And I think, you know, through Penn Future and other interested parties here, if you guys tell me you're comfortable, you think you're going to meet this 10% set aside for nonprofits, and I haven't looked at the numbers, I don't have a sneak preview, I think you are going to have a problem, but that's for another discussion. You know, we would encourage you to be proactive. And Donna, I understand you guys are always, you know, you can be a little bit stubborn at times, but we're trying to bring you here. We're trying to bring you, you know, trying to teach you how to fish here. So All I would ask is you work with us and be constructive, and I'm not saying you haven't been, but it does, this is an outside-the-box idea. You know, we'd like you to think outside the box.
We understand.
All right. Thanks. By the way, anybody can come back at me. I'm not glad to take my medicine if you thought I offended you.
So, wow, how do I follow that one? We'll summarize the takeaways, what we're looking for from staff. We would very much appreciate if you folks here, would email us, call us, make sure we get as much information as we can, because as I was talking to the staff, when we go to prepare this final report 4 months or whatever it is from now, what is said in this room is great, but it's not going to make it in necessarily into the final report as what you stated here. When I ask you for input or send out a section for draft, please make sure it's in writing, because my worst fear is that we write up a report, send it back out, and everybody redlines it to death and says, that's not what we talked about. I want to make sure that you're getting my input now as opposed to waiting till the last minute and then saying, well, you missed it. You missed my point. So let's get all the stuff in writing back and forth so we can essentially just cut and paste your positions in there without any misinterpretation. So with that, I have a couple takeaways. I know Frank made an excellent suggestion that we take this model that we have and we try to attach some metrics, some success measures to it if and when it's implemented full scale. And also, as a pilot, what makes the pilot successful? What are the metrics that we're looking for? As a follow-up to that, we had talked about is it too early, or are we at the point where we can put together implementation steps, cost of full-blown deployment, timelines? Because if we go to the commission and say we'd like to do this pilot, we also want to be able to tell them approximately how long it would take to do full-blown deployment, what the cost of full deployment would be, and again, as Frank said with the pilot, the benefits of the full deployment as well. Another thing I have down here is, can this pilot be expanded beyond what it's originally proposed now? We've heard a lot of comments, and I know the staff here really wants to make sure on-bill financing is available to the municipalities, the authorities, the governmental places that have come to us and said, as the chairman said, they want to get involved, but they need some financing assistance. Also to the low-income master meter facilities. I don't know if the model can be tweaked or if we need to put together three or so separate models.
Nonprofits and municipalities are actually in the model already.
Okay, excellent. So if there's other non-residential entities that need to be included in the model or they need a separate model, I think we'd like some discussion and comment on that. And the final thing I have is that, and Donna made the excellent suggestion, we want to be able to give the commission a list of off-bill financing options that are available out there so that everybody is aware that this is one of the tools that's available, potentially one of the tools that's available to assist in 129. And I think the commission's going to want to know, should we mandate on-bill financing, should we encourage it, or should we abandon it? And I think one of the tools that we're going to give them to make that decision is a list of all the type of financing options that are currently available to customers. So I'd appreciate if on those topics we could get some input prior to the next meeting. And when you send it in, I guess, Laura, how does that functionally work? Will they send it in to you and we send it back out, or are the people emailing each other within the working group at this point?
Please send it to the on-bill financing working group email address, the ra-obfwg@pa.gov. And then we can disperse it from there, but please send it directly to us so we have it. And also,
well, I know you folks have a couple extra points, but I see a question on my points.
It's not really a question, just another small thing to be thinking about is, and this kind of goes to the discussion earlier about the neutrality, the bill neutrality, and how to ensure that. There isn't a lot of definition in the pilot design yet about the auditing tool, and we may need to think about an approach that we'd recommend. So, you know, whether people would recommend doing benchmarking as part of this to the portfolio manager. That seems a logical one. If we're going to be doing schools, there's already quite a push in Pennsylvania to help schools benchmark. So just the technical details of how you would get toward, how you would move toward field neutrality and real energy savings in without a lot of cost attached to them.
Yes, please provide that to us. Please, sure. Please write that up. Is any of you write that up and provide it to us? We'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, I know our team's been working with Lori Ackman on the benchmarking, and the, mm-hmm. I think she was unable to make it up today, but
she was. She sends her apologies. She had two sick kids.
But it's really something that I know she wants us to try to best work those things in together. So I appreciate you bringing that point up.
And also, if you'd like. A helpful thing for us, we sent the pilot program around to everybody. So if you'd like, take that and please don't redline it, but please put bubble comments. When we have those things in context in the pilot, it's much easier to align your ideas with what's been proposed.
And when Laura says don't redline it, it doesn't mean this is the final document. It just means we'll take your comment, and then maybe at the next working group, as a group, we can redline the document. We'll have some sort, put it up on the screen, and we can have somebody type the changes in there and kind of semi-vote on it.
Yeah, and I think also since we did talk about this, and we started to talk about it in a little bit of detail, and Darren, please pitch in here. If you could send us your thoughts on. Whether or not on bill financing the funding should be restricted to Act 129 projects. I think that would be helpful also.
What the proper role is for those projects that may not fit into Act 129. They do have a role, but we're a staff right now, we're not sure what that role is.
Mm-hmm. Right. This will help us all work our way through this process.
Darren and Laura, I've been keeping a list of the questions, but it would be helpful if you could send them back out, because I like to use your headings in my comments so we all know we're talking about the same thing.
That'd
be great. Thanks.
This will go out.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they will be completely different when I write them.
But they will be the ones we answer.
And I'll try to edit them to make it look like what we just said here. But thank you all very much for coming out today. I know that some of the travel was not easy for everybody. There were some icy patches and some roads closed. So thank you for being here. And we appreciate your participation.
One last thing is we gave you the things that we would like to get back as a group. Are there things that any of you would like comment on from the working group, or things I said I want the following five things, or anything that you want that you would like to have the group comment on?
Yeah, Darren, now that we talked earlier about how financing and collateral issues and liens and stuff like that relate to commercial entities and their borrowing, I didn't know we were talking about governmental and municipality entities specifically. It strikes me that their borrowing profiles and lending profiles might be different. So, again, dumb mechanical engineer, if anybody can provide any different characterization or narrative on the things that were discussed earlier and how they might relate then specifically to that segment, I presume the small commercial still applies to multifamily, but now I'm thinking a whole different way. So, lenders are delighted to see people who have electric bills to pay. I think lending has some, probably if it's in a tax base in some way, affects the availability of funds and that kind of stuff. So,
and we might be talking about much different, bigger dollar amounts, I would think. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah.
We might be talking about much bigger dollar amounts. I mean, the programs that I'm... The projects that I'm aware of where they involve, like school districts, for example, where you do a project not within one building but within multiple buildings, those projects, my understanding had been more in the, $300,000 and up money. So I, too, thought we were focusing on those small commercial business
Yes,
sector.
We are, and there's a lot of government and municipalities that have small commercial buildings. It may be a DPW garage. They house two snow plows. They heat it during the winter. There's a lot of different implications. When you start getting up into 300,000, 500,000, then you start getting into where guaranteed savings contracts or performance agreements are starting to bubble up to the edge. Companies like Johnson Controls and such will start looking at them at that. They prefer a million and up, but they'll start looking. But there's also a lot of small stuff that's done on the edge for municipalities that's not covered. I'll give you a great example. As an organization, we did a whole series of funding for LED traffic lights. And those traffic lights, the average one was $7,000. So there's an example of where it's a municipality, it's a small commercial implication, but it's within a small dollar amount also. So
we get ourselves over on this side of the table in a semantic bind all the time because we think in terms of rate classes and rate schedules.
Yeah.
What I'm specifically interested in, though, I thought we're dealing with strictly commercial entities who may go bankrupt and may not pay their electric bill, et cetera, et cetera. But now you bring in governmental entities, and I know, you know, they fall under the same rules for termination. But I don't want to be the guy to pull the switch on the city of Harrisburg, for example. So the whole premise kind of, when you told me the termination was pretty important, now I'm scratching my head.
That's why we put that. That's why we put the opt out and the may, and we put a lot of loose wording in that when we wrote the pilot
right.
tariff on purpose
right.
to leave a lot of discretion up to the utility. The termination isn't necessary. It's just the threat.
But you told me before.
It's just the threat of the termination.
But okay, we need to explore that further.
Well, I agree, and I think
because I was in a completely different planet when we were talking about it before.
I think we can. One of the things we can do is try to define the focus. I mean, we talk about municipals or government organizations. I think we can try to define for this group does that mean?
Yeah.
Is it a municipal building in Camp Hill, or is it 57 school district buildings in Philadelphia? We might be able to provide guidance as part of this working group saying, well, when we say this, the intent is that this is a very successful program for XYZ, but when it's scaled up to this, there are limitations to it.
That would be great.
Yes, because I know as a staffer, I get calls from school districts and different things that want to do Act 129. They want to retrofit X amount of schools with heating, air conditioning, and lighting. And whether this would be appropriate for them or that's something we should get to that scope of what we're talking about.
Yes.
Definitely, it'll be on the list, and that's, I think, open for comment here. I think one of the things we'll put down on the list when we send the list out.
Just one final thought for me is we had talked at the first meeting about possibly inviting experts from the outside, states that have exemplary programs or other folks. Would that be of any interest? Just throwing that back out. I know we don't have, I think our next meeting is not until March.
I'll leave that up to the group to decide. My personal opinion on that is I think I would go another meeting with us trying to take our conceptual thing a little more firm, and then maybe we can bounce some of our ideas off those people and say, look, we're thinking about doing this, this, and this.
Yeah.
Did you think about this? Have you implemented this? What's the pros and cons? As opposed to just giving a presentation saying, this is what we did in New York, and we go, that's great, and then they leave.
Right.
We could tap their knowledge once we're more specific in the working group. That's just my opinion.
Sure.
Thoughts on that?
I think it would be helpful at some point.
Because
as I said earlier, I thought the KIA webinar was very, very helpful.
There's a lot of expertise out there.
And if I know it's probably a lot to look through, but if you look at what New York did and you look at the process they began in 2007, which was a broader process, and then you follow it down to where they ended up, that it's very helpful because you can see a lot of the issues. It sounds like the model that John has come up with in some ways is based on some of the parts of the New York program, at least what I looked at. And what I've read, it seemed like it matched up a little bit. I don't know if that's what you did.
That model was developed from bits and pieces of many different programs throughout the country. And the goals that we outlined on the first page, and then getting together with the group. The model that we ended up with is not the same model we started with. I mean, it evolved over many meetings.
And again, I have those issues. We'll send them back out, plus the one that Doug added. I very much appreciate the input, the dialogue today. I think even though at times we had a bit of an edge on each other, I think that's what makes it productive. If we all came in here and said, sounds good, it's not going to work. You know, we really need to know what are the issues that need to be resolved. I encourage you to put that in writing, to email it in, to get it to us, because great meeting, but a week from now I'm going to miss some of the points if I don't see them in writing. So, again, very much appreciated, and have a safe trip back home.
Thank you.
Okay.